Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I'm a first year resident going into radiology. This is the 70th episode of the Divine Intervention Podcasts, and today we're specifically going to be talking about onc pharmacology. This will be a two-part podcast again, because many of these onc drugs, they can get very frustrating very quick. So I'll try to split up the information into two podcasts, and you should be good to go after this. And the thing is, please, for onc pharmacology, I will not recommend saying like, oh, for pancreatic cancer, use all these drugs. For this, use all these drugs. Step one essentially does not test those pieces of information. There are some exceptions to those, but if you pay attention as we go along, I would mention those exceptions. Those are the only ones you need to commit to memory. In fact, to be perfectly honest, if you know what I'm going to discuss with these two podcasts for onc pharm, you should be golden for step one. So let's begin. Now, the thing is, as a class side effect, many cancer drugs cause bone marrow suppression. They cause alopecia. So the first drug group we'll talk about are the anti-metabolites, right? And basically, these drugs inhibit DNA synthesis. And remember that DNA synthesis occurs in the S phase of the cell cycle. In fact, I talked about this during the cell biology podcasts. So you prevent DNA and RNA synthesis if you're an anti-metabolite. Now, remember, let's just do some quick DNA review and then jump to the pharmacology so it's more easy to understand, right? So remember, we have purines. Those have two rings, right? Purines have two rings. Those are things like adenine and guanine, right? And then the pyrimidines have one ring, right? So like cytosine, uracil, and thymine. Now, one other thing you want to know is that when you deaminate cytosine, right, so you lose an amino group, you form uracil. And when you add a methyl group to uracil, you actually form thymine. So just remember CUT, C-U-T. To go from the C to the U, you perform a deamination. To go from the U to the T, you perform a methylation. And remember that if you take a nitrogen base, okay, plus a sugar, you have a nucleoside. I talked about this in the biochem video review. If you take a nucleoside and add a phosphate, you have a nucleotide, okay? Now, your anti-metabolites, the first class I'll talk about are the folate antagonists, right? And the poster child here is methotrexate. Remember, methotrexate is an inhibitor of dihydrofolate reductase, okay? And the key thing to understand here is that methionine is the major carrier of methyl groups in the body. Now, the thing is, if you want to go from deoxyuridine monophosphate to deoxythymidine monophosphate, right, in the process of DNA synthesis, you need an enzyme known as thymidylate synthase for that to happen, okay? And the thing is, that thymidylate synthase actually requires folate as a cofactor, right? It requires reduced folate, that's THF, as a cofactor to proceed in adding that methyl group I talked about earlier to uracil to convert it to thymine. So from deoxyuridine monophosphate to deoxythymidine monophosphate. But the thing is, after thymidylate synthase uses THF as a cofactor, it forms something known as DHF. If you want to keep that cycle going and you want to keep making that sweet, sweet DNA, you need to regenerate THF from DHF. And to regenerate that THF from DHF, we use an enzyme known as dihydrofolate reductase. So this is where methotrexate comes into play. Methotrexate inhibits dihydrofolate reductase. So you have no ability to regenerate THF from DHF. And if you have that, if you don't have that ability, then you cannot provide a cofactor to convert your uracil to thymine. And then you get into trouble. Another drug that also works at that part of the cycle, but for other purposes, right, a drug like trimethoprim, right? Trimethoprim is a DHFR inhibitor, so it's a dihydrofolate reductase inhibitor. Remember that you use it for PCP prophylaxis, right? And you can also use it to prophylax against Toxoplasma gondii. And then also don't forget pyrimethamine, right? Pyrimethamine is also an inhibitor of dihydrofolate reductase. It's actually used to treat toxo. So this is something that's actually very high yield to know for your exams. You prophylax against Toxoplasma gondii when the CD4 count is less than 100 with TMPSMX, right? So with trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. However, if a patient has confirmed toxoplasmosis, you treat it with pyrimethamine and sulfadiazine, okay? I know it's kind of like, you're like, oh, Divine, they have the same mechanism of action. It doesn't make any sense. I know, but that's what you want to pick on your USMLEs. Now, The thing is, if a patient is taking methotrexate, right, obviously it will suppress the bone marrow because you're not making DNA. If they have like profound bone marrow suppression and it's causing like significant symptoms, you can actually give them a THF analog to basically keep the cycle going in the presence of methotrexate. That THF analog is known as leucovorin, okay? That's the basis of the leucovorin rescue. And actually, an unusual question you may get on your USMLEs is for them to give you something relating to a person suffering bone marrow suppression from taking trimethoprim sulfur methoxazole or bone marrow suppression from taking pyrimethamine. You can also rescue those people from those the bone marrow suppression associated with those agents by giving leucovorin. Now, remember that methotrexate, right, it can actually cause pulmonary fibrosis, right? So it can cause like a restrictive pattern of lung disease. So hopefully you remember that your FEV1 to FVC ratio will be normal or slightly elevated, right? And because it causes like a pulmonary fibrosis, right, your DLC or your diffusion capacity for carbon monoxide will actually decrease, okay? And I mean, you want to know the other drugs that can cause a pulmonary fibrosis, right? So like we've already said methotrexate does that. Amiodarone, remember that's a class 3 antiarrhythmic. It's a potassium channel blocker. Remember bleomycin. Bleomycin is the only G2 specific agent. I've mentioned this in a prior podcast, mega high yield to know for step 1. Bleomycin, G2 agent, is it can also cause a pulmonary fibrosis. Busulfan can also cause pulmonary fibrosis. And also nitrofurantoin. Many ladies will know this drug as Macrobid. That's used to treat UTIs in females, like cystitis in females. It does cause a pulmonary fibrosis. So that's super rare, but it does happen. Now, methotrexate can also actually be used for the treatment of molar pregnancy, right? So the classic exam question will be like a lady that's super young, it's her first pregnancy, and she's having preeclampsia-like symptoms in the first trimester. That's kind of weird, right? This is like before 20 years. It's kind of off-kilter, right? If you ever see that, think about molar pregnancy, right? Classically, you do an ultrasound and you see like the snowstorm appearance on imaging. So again, for hydatidiform molar pregnancy, basically any gestational trophoblastic disease, even choriocarcinoma, right, ectopic pregnancies, all those things are susceptible to methotrexate, okay? And if your liver doesn't work, don't give methotrexate. It's not a great idea. Okay, now, the next set of drugs we'll jump to that are anti-metabolites are the pyrimidine analogs, right? So the big one we'll talk about is 5-FU. I mean, there's others, but this is the big one you probably want to know. So 5-fluorouracil, right? The thing is, 5-fluorouracil is actually converted in the body to 5-DUMP. But it is not just like deoxyuridine monophosphate, it's like 5-F-dump, okay? So 5-fluorodeoxyuridine monophosphate, right? Because if you remember from cell biology reviews, right? So in DNA, you have a 3-prime. Actually, I also talked about this in the biochem reviews. So in DNA, you have a 3-prime hydroxy group, right? And the thing is, that 3-prime hydroxy group is part of what you use to form the phosphodiester bond. So let's assume that hydroxy group's not there, right? You can then cause something known as chain termination. Because if, for example, you're a nifty pharmacologist and you pulled off that hydroxy group and slapped on like a fluorine there, for example, then DNA is like, wait, where's my 3' hydroxy group? Can't form any phosphodiester bond. And then you cause something called chain termination and boom, you're a cancer drug. Okay, so this is essentially how many of these pyrimidine analogs work, right? So for example, in 5-FU, that 3' hydroxy group is substituted for a 3' fluorine. Okay, and then that causes chain termination. And remember, I said that you can use leucovorin to rescue a person that has a toxicity from methotrexate. Well, actually, leucovorin increases the toxicity of 5-FU. Here's why. When you give 5-FU, it's converted to 5-FDUMP, right? The thing is, that DUMP is converted to DTMP in DNA synthesis. And I already said that THF is used as a cofactor in that reaction under the action of thymidylate synthase. Well, if THF is a cofactor for that reaction that involves DUMP, right? Imagine if you're giving like an FDUMP analog and you're giving more leucovorin, which is a THF analog, that reaction will go even better, so you can get even more toxicity from 5-FU. So again, very high yield to know this. Leucovorin can be used to rescue the bone marrow in methotrexate toxicity, that's bone marrow suppression. However, leucovorin actually increases the toxicity of 5-fluorouracil. And I mean, I've talked about this other point many times in many prior podcasts, but remember the 5-fluocytosine, right? The drug that we used to treat, what's this bug called? Cryptococcus neoformans, right? That 5-fluocytosine is actually converted by cytosine deaminase in the body to 5-FU, and then it destroys a cryptococcus that way. Remember, cryptococcus is the thing that has the India ink stain and causes meningitis in HIV patients. And then there's some other pyrimidine analogs like cytarabine. Just remember, cytarabine is a pyrimidine analog. That's all I'm going to say about that. Now let's jump to the purine analogs, right? So the purine analogs, they work under the purview of the purine salvage pathway. I've talked about the purine salvage pathway in previous podcasts, but I'll just give you a quick Cliff's Notes version here. So the thing is, say for example, you have GTP, right? So guanosine triphosphate, right? If you remove a phosphate, or let's say two phosphates, you form GMP. And then that GMP, right, that's still a nucleotide because it has a phosphate group. You remove the last phosphate and then you form guanosine. Guanosine is a nucleoside because it's just the nitrogen base and the sugar. And then let's assume you then remove the sugar. You're then left with the nitrogenous base guanine. Okay. Now, the thing is, if you want to go back and reverse all you've just done, to go back from like guanosine to like GMP, for example, you need to add a phosphate and a sugar. And the enzyme that makes that happen is HGPRT, right? So, and I mean, the name is actually very helpful. HGPRT, which is a hypoxanthine guanine phosphoribosyl transferase, right? So, hypoxanthine guanine, right? Phosphoribosyl, so phosphor, you're adding the phosphate, ribosyl, you're adding the sugar, transferase, right? So transfer enzyme. So HGPRT, okay, HGPRT helps you reverse that reaction in the process of the purine salvage pathway. And please don't forget, right, if a patient has a HGPRT deficiency, that's the pathophysiology behind Lechnihan syndrome. Basically, they will describe a boy with like self-mutilating behavior. Remember, it's an X-linked recessive disease. Now, I mean, this is more a theoretical thing. I don't think it makes much in the way of a clinical use, but it's something that I could see them potentially introducing on step one. But basically, if a patient has Lechnihan syndrome, you probably would not want to give them the drug azathioprine. Because the thing is, if you want to activate azathioprine to 6-mecaptopurine, you actually need HGPRT for that process to work. And I will talk about that actually like in a few seconds. And then, so I guess I'll just go ahead and jump to the next drug. Okay, so this is again also a purine analog, 6-mecaptopurine. The thing is, the prodrug here is azathioprine. The thing is, azathioprine is converted to 6-MP, and then HGPRT converts that 6-MP to something called 6-thioinosinic acid. Okay, that's like the activated form of 6-MP, if you may. This activated purine can then basically inhibit many steps in purine synthesis. Now, why is 6-MP is an anti-cancer drug, but what are some things you want to know about, other things you want to know about 6-MP? The thing is, 6-MP, you break it down into inactive metabolites via many mechanisms. But the key one you want to know for step one is xanthan oxidase, right? So the thing is, if, for example, you take a xanthan oxidase inhibitor, like allopurinol or febuxostat, right? You inhibit xanthan oxidase, you cut down on the breakdown of 6-MP, and if that happens, you actually can boost your 6-MP to like very toxic levels. Alternatively, some oncology physicians actually take advantage of this. They actually give like people that are being treated for cancer a xanthan oxidase inhibitor like allopurinol or febuxostat to actually decrease the dose of azathioprine that they need to give their patients. So it's kind of useful in that regard. And then another purine analog you want to know about is 6-thioguanine. It's a purine analog. That's all you need to know. Hydroxyurea is another cancer drug I'll talk about. Basically, use this for sickle cell disease, right? Because it actually, by some unknown mechanism, increases the production of hemoglobin F. Remember that if you want to go from RNA to DNA, right? So like going from a ribonucleic acid to a deoxyribonucleic acid, it's a reduction reaction. And because it's a reduction reaction, it should make sense that the enzyme that makes that happen is ribonucleotide reductase. Ribonucleotide reductase is inhibited by hydroxyurea. Okay, so that's how ribonucleotide reductase can act as an that's how hydroxyurea can act as an anti-cancer agent. But I will be stunned if you ever saw anything beyond the use of hydroxyurea in sickle cell disease tested on an exam. Okay, now cladribine is another purine analog. It's used to treat hairy cell leukemia. That's all I'm going to say about that. Okay, so now let's talk about the anti-cancer antibiotics and we'll round up for today. Basically, there are two general mechanisms of anti-cancer antibiotics. Okay, actually some of them come from a streptomycin species, but anywho. But the big thing you want to just remember is that these anti-cancer antibiotics, right? So they have two general mechanisms, right? So one is that they can cause a DNA intercalation, okay? Please don't confuse DNA intercalation with DNA cross-linking. DNA cross-linking is something totally different. I'll talk about that in the next podcast. But DNA intercalation is basically you getting in the way of DNA. DNA cross-linking is not you getting in the way of DNA. It's totally different, okay? It's totally different. Now, so, again, first mechanism of action, they can cause DNA intercalation. Second thing is that they can generate free radicals. Now, the thing is, to understand these anti-cancer antibiotics, just sort of group them into three categories. There are those that do both. They generate free radicals, they intercalate. There are those that do only intercalating, and there are those that do only free radical generation, right? So in terms of doing both, think about your anthracyclines, right? So drugs like doxorubicin and donorubicin. The high yield things you want to know about these drugs, they generate free radicals through the Fenton reaction. Okay, remember, iron is a key player in that Fenton reaction. I know you've probably heard this many times from Pathoma. The thing is, this free radical generation underlies these drugs causing an irreversible dilated cardiomyopathy because of like free radical injury to the cardiac myocytes. And you can actually prevent this by giving a drug known as dextroxoxane. Dextroxoxane is an ion chelator that is used in the treatment of, that is used to prevent the dilated cardiomyopathy that accompanies doxo and donorubicin use. And again, remember that dilated cardiomyopathy is a type of systolic heart failure, right? So basically like HFrEF, heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. In fact, let's just go ahead and talk this out real quick because it's actually kind of high yield to know this for exams. In systolic heart failure, you have a reduced ejection fraction, right? This is what's associated with eccentric hypertrophy, where you essentially add sarcomeres in series, okay? Contrast that with diastolic heart failure, where you have a preserved ejection fraction. Basically, you have problems filling the ventricles, okay? And that's associated with a concentric hypertrophy of a cardiac myocyte. So you're essentially adding sarcomeres in parallel. Remember that cardiac cells, at least for purposes of the USMLEs, can only undergo hypertrophy and increase in size. They cannot undergo hyperplasia. They cannot just make new cardiac myocytes. Okay, it's kind of important to know that. That's why MIs are bad in the first place, right? And your doxodonorubicin, just don't forget that they cause red urine, also like rifampin. Now, the drugs that only work by causing DNA intercalation, those are drugs like actinomycin D, okay? People also call it dactinomycin. One other thing I guess dactinomycin does is that it can actually inhibit RNA polymerase, right? So it can inhibit DNA-dependent RNA polymerase. Remember that actinomycin D is used to treat childhood cancers, right? So like Ewing's or like Wilms tumors, right? So this is an example of where, a drug being used to treat a specific cancer is something you want to know about, okay? This is one example of that situation. Now, just I guess while I'm on the business of discussing DNA-dependent RNA polymerase inhibitors like actinomycin D, Don't forget that alpha amanitin, right? So like that death cap mushroom also works through that mechanism. Remember, that can cause like liver failure, kidney failure, and then you ultimately die. And then rifampin. Rifampin also works through inhibiting RNA polymerase, and it also causes red urine. But remember, I said red urine is for your doxodonorubicin, actinomycin D, for the most part, works primarily by causing DNA intercalation. And then the anti-tumor antibiotics that work by generating free radicals include drugs like bleomycin. Bleomycin, just know that it causes pulmonary fibrosis, and it's it's so ridiculously high yield, it's unbelievable. You need to know that bleomycin works in the G2 phase of the cell cycle. In fact, it is probably the only drug you need to know on step one that works specifically in the G2 phase of the cell cycle. It's a very, very high yield point to know for your exams. And again, I remember it causes pulmonary fibrosis, and actually this drug does not cause bone marrow suppression. So I know I've talked about a lot of drugs today. So in the next podcast, I'll pick up with the alkylating agents. I'll talk about some other anti-cancer drugs, and you should be a master of onc pharmacology. So have a wonderful rest of the day. I just want to point out that I offer tutoring for the USMLE Step 1, 2CK, 2CS, and Step 3 exams. I've tutored hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people for those tests. I also tutor to the medicine in training exams and also the medicine board exams, and also the application prep. Basically, I can prepare your ERAS application for residency, also help your mock interviews, and also the MCAS application for med school. I have done this with, again, tons of people. I have a lot of experience both helping people in this purpose, and also some other nice experience with regards to admissions committees that also make me pretty useful in this regard. So if you know anyone that needs any of those services, feel free to pass them along to me. The email is divineinterventionpodcasts with an S at the end @gmail.com. Alternatively, they can just email me through the website. And and then I should be able to point you in the right direction. So have a wonderful rest of the day. I hope the Lakers win their game against the Pistons tonight. I'll see you in the next podcast. God bless. Thank you.